Had my head in a desk lately. Anyway, so I'm Rick Hansen. It's May 17th, 2017. And I want to talk with you tonight from this book of teachings of the Buddha about social and communal harmony. And I want to begin by making the observation that even though Buddhism has this sort of reputation as the bummer religion or philosophy or way of life, you suffer and then you die and then you're reborn and you suffer again. You know, it sort of has that quality to it, sort of dour and grim. Actually, the Buddha himself was known as the happy one. And in the context of so much of practice, having a progressive quality to it. Maybe the progressive quality is the uncovering of the radiant true self that was always already there. Nonetheless, there is some progressive process. And as someone who's very interested myself in our bodies and what changes occur in the body as we become increasingly happy and loving and wise, that too is a progressive process of easing and releasing the impact of old trauma, old pain, old tendencies, and cultivating in the body, hardwired in particular into the nervous system, increasing qualities of compassion, gratitude, resilience, moral commitment, skillfulness of various kinds, and joy. So in this progressive process, we have a destination. We have a mind that is utterly rested as an operational and psychological definition of awakening, a mind that is utterly rested in a sense of that highest happiness, which is peace, quoting the Buddha, and is incapable of any sustained problematic greed or hatred or delusion. So there's a destination, but as they say in Tibet, we can take the fruit as the path. In other words, there's a path to happiness and a path of happiness. And a question here is, what's your path of happiness already? What is it made of? And what aids it? What supports it? What protects your own path of happiness? Washing the dishes, interacting with other people, watching television, going to work, walking the dog, raising a family, making love, making politics, a path of happiness. What might that look like? Especially in terms of our focus this year, our interactions in relationship with other people. What's the path of happiness with other people? So to that end, I'd like to read a couple of teachings here and open it up for discussion. So one of the first things I'll offer is a short quotation.
Quick question. Is this thing supposed to be plugged into something?
Oh, it is plugged into, thank you, Gabriel. It is plugged into, I hope it is, my recorder, and it is, happily. That's good, right? No, I'm an old school rock climber, you know what I mean? Like triple anchors for your belay, check your partner's knots, they check your knots. Way to go, that's good. All right, so that's an example of what I'm going to be getting to momentarily. Actually, very good. You knew that you knew what the Buddha was thinking. All right, all those many years ago. Anyway, so it is said that the Buddha said, "Well done is that action of doing, which one repents not later." And I might add, this is part of actions of doing, speaking, and thinking. So it would apply to all of them. And the key here is action.
Can you say that first part again?
Yeah. Well done is that action, which one repents not later, and the fruit of which one reaps with delight and happiness. So, the Buddha's offering criteria, or standards, or guidance, north stars for our actions of body, speech, and thought, thought broadly defined. Well done is that action which one repents not later. One doesn't regret. One doesn't wish one had been much more skillful. One doesn't have remorse over. One doesn't feel bad about the damaging impacts on others, in that sense of repent. And also, especially, well done is that action, the fruit of which, the results of which, the karmas of which, broadly defined, the results of action, one reaps like a harvest. The Buddha was a farmer. One reaps with delight and happiness. So, with other people, what are those actions which one repents, regrets, not later, and the fruits of which one reaps with delight and happiness? So I'd like to share with you one of my just all-time favorite passages from the Buddha Dharma, and I'll read it to you exactly as it's given. It's set in a monastic setting 2,500 years ago. A little bit, I think, you couldn't make this stuff up, so it has a real ring of credibility for me personally. And so I'll read it kind of slowly, and then we can talk about it, okay? So on one occasion, when the venerables, these are senior monks, senior practitioners, on one occasion when the venerables Anuruddha, Nandiya, and Kimbila were living in the Gosinga Sala tree wood, the Blessed One, the Buddha, went to visit them. When they heard he had arrived, all three went to meet the Blessed One. One took his bowl and outer robe, one prepared a seat, and one set out water for washing the feet. The Blessed One sat down on the seat made ready and washed his feet. Then those three venerable ones paid homage to the Blessed One and sat down at one side. When they were seated, the Blessed One said to them, "I hope you are all keeping well, Anuruddha. I hope you are all comfortable and not having any trouble getting alms food." "We are keeping well, Blessed One," he replied. "We are comfortable and we are not having any trouble getting alms food." "I hope, Anuruddha," said the Buddha, "that you are all living in concord with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes." "Surely, Bhante," he says to the Buddha, "we are living in concord with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes." "But, Anuruddha," the Buddha said, "how do you live thus?" "Bhante," says Anuruddha, "as to that, I think," he says, "I think it is a gain for me, Anuruddha, it is a great gain for me that I am living with such companions in the holy life. Also," Anuruddha goes on, "I maintain bodily acts of loving kindness toward those venerable ones, both openly and privately. I maintain verbal acts of loving kindness toward them both openly and privately. I maintain mental acts of loving kindness toward them both openly and privately. I consider, why should I not set aside what I wish to do and do what they wish to do? Then I set aside what I wish to do and do what they wish to do. We are different in body, but one in mind. That is how, Bhante, we are living in concord with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes." "Good, good," says the Buddha. "I hope that you all abide diligent, ardent, and resolute." "Surely, Bhante, we abide diligent, ardent, and resolute." "But, Anuruddha, how do you abide thus?" "Bhante, as to that, whichever of us returns first from the village with alms food, prepares the seats, sets out the water for drinking and for washing, and puts the refuse bucket in its place. Whichever of us returns last eats any food left over if he wishes. Otherwise, he throws it away where there is no greenery or drops it into water where there is no life. He puts away the seats and the water for drinking and for washing. He puts away the refuse bucket after washing it, and he sweeps out the refectory. Whoever notices that the pots of water for drinking, washing, or the latrine are low or empty takes care of them. If they are too heavy for him, he calls someone else by a signal of the hand, and they move it by joining hands. But because of this, we do not break out into speech. But every 5 days, we sit together all night discussing the Dhamma, the teaching, and whatever is true. That is how we abide, diligent, ardent, and resolute. Okay. This is sometimes called the Sutta of milk and water, mingling like milk and water. Obviously, it's laid out as an aspiration. And also, it's really quite practical. The people in it are talking about living with others on a basis of really, really taking the other into account and being really reflective and non-harming and benevolent in how they act with their minds, their words, and their deeds. This takes me into a particular teaching from a senior monk and Englishman with a Buddhist name, Amaro, who made a comment about his personal practice in a magazine some years ago. And I always get interested in what really dedicated and mature practitioners is their own growing edge. What are they working with, right? And Amaro said that he was practicing with contentiousness in his mind and interpersonally. And I know him, actually. I was on a board with him for a while, and he's a very charming, likable, witty, bright, you know, generous guy. And I'm thinking, wow, Amaro's working with contentiousness. Contentiousness being quarrelsomeness, or bickeringness, or argumentativeness. Or some other examples that I'll get into momentarily. And that word really struck me about contentiousness. Clearly these monks here, mingling like milk and water, are not being contentious with each other. And it can be extremely useful, I have found, both as an act of benevolence toward others and especially as enlightened self-interest oneself, to really observe and disengage from contentiousness. For example, telling about myself, lately I've been under a lot of time pressure finishing a book, and for the last 2.5 weeks or so, I've had this strange slow motion cold, you know? So I've been, I would say, particularly prickly, okay? Prickly. And everything's fine, and then my wife will say something dumb. Now, I don't really mean it's dumb. It's not really dumb. So she'll say something, and I'll think there's a word she used that was wrong, or she's going off on a tangent, or whatever, you know? And I've watched myself lately jumping in more than I usually do to point out the error of her ways, right? And, of course, because I'm a therapist, I do it covertly, and you know, not always covertly, or but you know, whatever. But the bottom line is I'm contending, I'm resisting, right? And the art, of course, which I hope we'll explore throughout this year, is how do we find the strong heart where we are both non-contentious while also really taking care of our own needs. That's a very interesting place, isn't it? But I want to focus tonight on the contentiousness part. So what are some of the flags? Impatience. Irritability, exasperation. I was debriefing a kind of a conflict I had with someone involved at the board of Spirit Rock, and there was a neutral kind of guide with us. This was 15, 18 years ago, maybe 15 or so. And we were talking, and the person was acknowledging that on the substance, I was correct, you know, about what I was trying to talk about there. And then she said this really interesting point to me. She said, but also, Rick, you're leaking a lot of exasperation, and you just don't need to do that. You know those little leakages? You know? Really? You know? Or, you know, the exasperation, okay. Okay. And another clue, so again, you look to yourself, what are subtleties of contentiousness, is taking the bait. And that is where you're talking with somebody about something that is important. Maybe you're giving them a request. Gee, from now on, I love it if you stopped doing X or started doing Y. All right, great. And then they start talking about Z. Now, I'm a longtime couples counselor. I've seen a lot of this. All right. So, and then what happens? So I say, gee, I'd really hope you will do X. And then they go, well, yeah, but Z. And right there is the bait. What do? Now, maybe we go after Z a bit. But often the wise move is to not take the bait and chase this other thing. Say, okay, well, let's talk about Z, all right? And going back to X, what do you think about that? Do you hear me here? Could you do that? It would mean a lot to me if you would do that. Well, Z, Z, Z. Okay, I got it. And about that dishwasher, right? Or about that agreement we have about how much candy our kids get, or when they go to bed, or whatever else it might be. And that's another form of contentiousness I see, where people chase this extraneous, kind of irrelevant topic, which, frankly, I think some of the time gets tossed into the mix by Z, by the other person, as a kind of trolling, quote unquote. They're trying to distract us from the main thread by drawing us into something else. Right? And then we get into this contentiousness about it. So anyway, I want to offer that and then maybe talk about some real situations, how we might explore this basic idea. And so to kind of finish, I encourage you to reflect on what is your personal path of happiness with other people. It's happy along the way. The Buddha talked about what's good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. Right? What constitutes that? You might bring to mind a difficult relationship, a challenging relationship, or maybe a significant relationship that has challenges in it amidst perhaps many things that are wonderful. Often family relationships have that quality. So what would be more of a path of happiness in that relationship, or what's going on when they're doing their thing and whatever the conditions are is true, but in your core, there's a sense of well-being and ease, even as you deal with issues. So that's a good reflection, right? And then another related reflection is to really kind of tell the truth for yourself about contentiousness, including just in your mind, where you just keep maybe a poker face, but internally, you're just arguing with them a lot. I cannot tell you the number of emails I've written at 3 o'clock in the morning, lying in bed, in my mind, you know, perfecting the words. Righteousness is another indicator, impatience, irritability, exasperation, and righteousness. That's another real indicator of contentiousness. Okay, so what do you think? Great, in the back, Sylvia. Okay.
Our nation. So, of course, he advanced and other people didn't. And this is getting back to what, in fact, I left you a really great book that was this kind of a dialogue of him.
Ah, thank you.
And it's lovely because it's pretty much saying that when you're in a situation where there's anger or something, you do the opposite. With a quiet voice, you bring them down, the path because everybody wants this. Mm. And if you could stay calm and show them another way, that's called interconnectedness.
Okay.
However, nowadays I do find myself, because I've gone through a lot of transformation, and it's actually not really transformation, but the way you're brought up, like I'm saying, even in Catalonia villages, there's 10 people and they don't talk. They stay with each other for 5 days and they're all friends, they all get along. It's kind of like a Buddha thing.
Sure.
And some people, like my friends that I've known for 45 years, they're still the same. do you stay on a basis of love and right. your true self when somebody's not acting that form? And you don't want to kind of say, hey, just a second, you're acting like that, because then you really don't want to get
oh, yeah.
them, you know? So it's hard when you change, you know?
Well, thank you. There's a lot in that. Yeah, it's a big topic. So a couple of things. Sylvia is referring to what are called the Jataka tales, these tales that arose after the Buddha passed away. There were kind of stories in that framework of northern India 2,200, 2,400 years ago of Buddha's previous lives in various incarnations leading up to awakening. Who knows? The larger point is that here we are. We're with the people we're with. Love the one you're with, right? We're with the people that we're with, for better or for worse. And here we are with our own capacities. Whatever may have been true on previous lives, what are we going to do, as you know, Mary Oliver puts it, the poet, you know, tell me, what is it you will do, what shall you do with your one wild and precious life? Right? One wild and precious life. So that's kind of where we are, right? Part one. Part two, Sylvia was referring to Catalonia in Spain, distinct from... distinct from the West. And, you know, see what you think is true about, you know, cultural effects on contentiousness or not. The bottom line point, and then let's explore how we do this ourselves, is how can we stay centered where we're with that other real person, where we're not getting caught up in wars with them, while at the same time reserving the right, as I talked about last week, to be happy ourselves, and reserving the right to see what we see ourselves, and to call it the way we see it, as appropriate, ourselves, right? And I just know, for me, I'd love to hear more from you, when I stay out of impatience, exasperation, and righteousness, and when I disengage from extraneous issues and I stay locked onto the prize, and I try to consolidate the gain, whatever that gain is, before chasing every other thing in the kitchen sink, then my odds personally go up of being more able to stay in that sweet spot of the strong heart, where the heart is open, there is compassion for the other, and there is also a fearlessness. I've quoted the Buddha talking about one is wise who is peaceable, friendly, and fearless. That's what I've seen for myself. So what have you seen for yourself about contentiousness, quarrelsomeness, and needless wrangling of various kinds? Okay, first you, yeah.
I think about acting from my values.
No.
You know, how do I want to be?
Great.
You know, so if I'm thinking, how do I want to be, and that's my intention, you know, then I feel like there's this movie called Australia, and in the movie there's a warrior. There's a scene where a warrior's standing, and everything's rushing around in circles around him. And I bring up that image, and so I try to stay centered. The other thing that I do, which is kind of unusual, is that I've studied neuroscience, and I think about people having different brains.
Mm.
And because they have different brains, they have different styles of thinking and of acting. And if I think, well, let's say they have a cingulate brain, you know, or whatever, they're going to be more like this or that, and I try to have compassion for them, knowing that their brain is different, that everyone's brain is different.
Thank you. I'm going to summarize what you said very super briefly. One, knowing what your values are, what really matters, and what, you know, I think one of the arts of raising teenagers is lose battles to win the war. I'm using that metaphor, but, right? You're playing the long game to win. Right? And then the other thing I really hear you say is respecting diversity, many kinds of diversity, and one way into that is to appreciate, you know, neurological diversity as well. Great. Okay, great. I'll just sweep this way. Sure.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the whole idea of contentiousness and thinking that people have, in somewhat, having conflict is a natural, healthy thing. And if having conflict in relationships, is part of intimacy. And mm-hmm. if you can't have conflict, you shut down and you act a certain way.
Yeah.
And so I was just thinking, you know, we have, it's almost like we're animated by these, you know, needs that come through us. Self, you know, kind of like adversarial needs.
Yeah.
To have to engage a certain way. And I think to be able to do that in a way where the person's not threatened, you're not threatened, and to have that is...
So how do you do conflict without contentiousness? How do you grapple with differences, and including sometimes heat, without tipping into contentiousness? What's for you the sweet spot?
Well, I think owning your own experience, but being able to put it out there directly and not necessarily blaming the other person.
Huh.
Like that. But
that's great.
I mean, you could go on and on in that way. But I was just sort of giving a little plug for conflict here.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a very important point, because we could suppress.
Yeah.
Right. And then, which in a weird way fuels contentiousness, ultimately.
Right. Yeah. When you were first talking about all these monks and the Buddha was, and they were talking, it was like, I said, where's the rub here? I'm not buying this. Somehow, if they were that good, they wouldn't be saying it quite so eloquently.
Ah.
You know, it seemed a little bit, kind of like, oh, we're so wonderful kind of thing. And it's just sort of, that's where my mind is always looking for the shadow kind of.
Sure, you know, what's left out.
Jobs.
Yeah. Well, as monastics will tell you, there's a lot of conflict in the nunnery or the monastery, often, right? So the politics and the gossip and the personality conflicts are still quite alive and well.
Right.
On the one hand, so that is true. On the other hand, it is very interesting to be strong, like you said, and owning your experience without any feeling that you're at war with the other person or you've put them out of your heart. I mean, I think we've probably all experienced that. I definitely have, where I'm being strong and I'm being real, and I'm not trying to beat the person down. I don't have ill will for them. In the back of my mind, I'm watching to see what they actually do over the long run and how much I'm going to stay in this relationship or in what form. But, right? Mm-hmm. There's no meanness.
Yeah, no,
there's no top spin.
You don't have to win.
Yeah, there's no need to dominate. There's no effort to not be one down. All that is just irrelevant. It's like you've popped through the sound barrier. You're on the other side of that. Yeah, it's possible. And how do we do it? Yeah.
So, Jerry. Within the Buddha stories, there was like this reverence for orderliness and the everyday. And also, I think built into that was a way of sublimating the possible conflicts by saying, well, if we do this, then everybody does the job and we can get along, we can center ourselves and have peaceful meditations, let's say.
Yeah.
And in my house, my wife is still working, so I'll do the dishes and make the beds, and it's my sadhana. It's my it helps keep it feels good.
Yeah. It's harder to contend with someone who's holding up their end of the log. You know?
Say again?
It's harder to contend with someone who's holding up their end of the log. I think that's just true. To me, that goes to what I call unilateral virtue, where you establish for yourself autonomously what's the reasonable upper bound of what you take responsibility for and the goods you want to deliver interpersonally, where you zero out to the maximum degree possible that you consider reasonable the grievances of the other person. Yeah, and also you respond to the expressed needs and requests of the other person to the maximum reasonable extent and kind of draw a line one after another through their, whatever you decide is reasonable of their basis, of their issues with you. Including what feels good. And then just think about it, when you're that kind of person, it's hard for another person to contend with you. Because you are being impeccable, basically. You are delivering the goods. You know, it's in a realistic way. I think that's a foundation of non-contentiousness too, to look to one's own side of the street and clean up one's own act, and then see, then look to others, what they've left undone. But first look to oneself. I think that's embedded as in the passage here, and it's also I've found personally to be very useful. Yeah. Great, please.
Hi. This is the first time I've been here.
And yeah.
No accident. I call it a God wink, kind of a cosmic coincidence. Huh. In the past couple of months, I've been in this place with my fiance where we're quarreling constantly over small nitpicking things. Where
with your who?
With my fiance.
Oh, fiance. Please keep going. Thank you.
Snapping at me all the time, rather than say, I don't know. I can't do it now. Instead of just saying, I don't know, I can't do it now.
Right.
Or,
yeah.
There's another thing that we do. It turns into a big, huge, huge, huge fight.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard that a million times. That kind of thing. We do it all the time, and I don't know what to do about it. It just.
That's well. Thank you. I'm glad you're here, and you know this is where the rubber meets the road. Definitely, right? I've had two fiancés, and I married the second one. We had a pre-honeymoon, the first one, and we ran around the country in a Volkswagen bus for a month, living in close quarters, the bus breaking down and all the rest of that. That's like a test, isn't it? Anyway, so I have a couple of suggestions about that. One, I think you called out a really important point. Tone. Tone is incredibly salient.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah, we really react to tone. Technically, it's an interesting point. In communication are three elements, the explicit content, the emotional tone, and often an implicit statement about the nature of the relationship, including the power structure. Who's on top, who's on the bottom. When I, correct my wife, I'm going one up. I'm the knower, she's the knowee, right? I'm the teacher, she's the student. And I'm right, she's wrong. I'm better, she's less. You know what I mean? And so that's an implicit communication. We tend to pay most attention to the overt content, the substance. But actually, what has the greatest impact, usually? What do we remember? Tone.
Delivery.
Tone and the presumption that they have about the nature of the relationship, right? Statement about the relationship. So that's what we ought to pay most attention to. So tracking tone oneself and being careful about tone. Unilateral virtue again, cleaning up this side of the street, we can still say a lot with clean tone, even being heated, without tipping into what the Buddha called harsh tone. Different cultures have different standards for what's harsh, different styles, okay, so be it. But we can kind of feel for ourselves when we're crossing the line. We're going, or we're slamming right up into it. So taking care of that over here, and then that puts us into a better position to talk about talking with the other person. That's one of the most powerful moves as well, to pop up to the observer commentary place where you talk about talking. And sometimes you have to say, can we talk about talking? In other words, can we talk about maybe going to have dinner somewhere in a neutral place, sitting at a park, where we can actually sit down and talk about how we talk with each other and maybe coming up with some understandings about kind of what's in bounds and what's out of bounds.
Yeah, that's exactly kind of what we do lately, as I say. But right after we had this huge thing the other night, I said, okay, let's have a thing that we do where you talk for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And look at the clock and say whatever you want about yourself. Yeah. That's what I did. I talked about talking. Mm-hmm. And she has her turn, vice versa. And that worked.
That's great.
So I guess let's talk about talking.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I find that's often one of them. When things are contentious, often what helps is to say, well, the problem is we have poor process. Poor process leads to poor product. in a sense. Where we are with each other is problematic. That's what we need to kind of look at. Because if we have good process, we can handle all kinds of crud, including real conflicts between us, if we have good process. So that's a fancy way of putting talking about talking. And can we even come up with some sort of ground rules, like what kind of words are not okay to say, or what's uncool, or just honestly how it lands on me given my family. When you do that, you grew up in your family, but man, when it, that was normal for your family. But when you go there with me, whoa, that really hits. That really hurts. So can we talk about that? So that's great. One last little thing, then we'll wrap up. I'll say one more thing, which is when people are tipping into what you're describing with your fiancé, right? That sharpness, that tone, often I find what's helpful is to just slow it down and kind of try to read what's really going on and almost reboot a little bit. Honey, what's going on? Did I screw up here? I find it actually helps to start going one down a little bit, you know? One of the great couples therapists, John Gottman, talks about a slow startup rather than just coming in with, that's bad tone and I thought we had an agreement. You would never say that again or something. Whoa, game on, World War III, right? No, so honey, did I misunderstand you or have I screwed up or is it all right? Or, you know, in other words, I find very often people quarrel up here with sort of superficial proxy wars. You know, they're bickering about the twigs and the leaves because the trunk and the roots are not being well cared for. Something's missing. Some way a person feels unmet, unheard, unnourished, or maybe there's just a need in their life outside of the frame of the relationship that really bears some tending. And to be on, again, on the receiving end of someone who's, you got to be careful, not doing it to game you or to use the lingo as a power move, but who vulnerably and genuinely, with an open heart, is wondering, basically, sweetheart, I mean, it seems like something's bothering you. Is it me? Help me understand. Thich Nhat Hanh, by the way, has some wonderful ways of talking about this that just are saturated with his own sweetness and personal realization. Okay. Yeah. Last person, and then we'll wrap up.
I grew up in a family of around the dinner table with interrupters. And, you know, what helped me immensely was that active listening course I took. And so it's, we all just want to be heard. We don't really have to say, I agree with you, but you have to say, I have to say, it sounds like what you're saying is this and this. And people, I love it. Your fiance would love it if you just said back to her what you thought you heard say and vice versa. And it's so powerful to be heard and to say back what you think they heard.
Yeah.
Number two is with my teenage daughter, I don't criticize her. But I praise her, I have gratitude for her, but it's got to be sincere. And when it's sincere, it kind of melts a lot of that contentiousness. And so those are a couple points I just wanted to make.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you for offering those as well. Okay, milk and water. Better wrap up, it's all right. Milk and water. Not taking the bait, you know, not sticking to things. Right. So how about we just sit for a minute, let it sink in, and we'll finish up. A path of happiness. Also, non-contentiousness with yourself. That's a deep inquiry. Considering the words you use to yourself in your own mind, how you might push and prod yourself. It's an interesting reflection, not being contentious with oneself. Take good care. See you next week. Thank you all. Thank you all. Thank you. Yeah, better.